It's time to be healed. Get ready for emotional well-being. Help you heal yourself from past wounds and open the window of density for a special and unique life. Healing stories that bring awareness to our heart's love core. It's the matter of the heart. And now, your host, Carol Olivia.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Matter of the Heart on Independent Talk Radio, 1100 AM, KFNX. Step into your studio with me, your host, Carol Olivia, and we have a very exciting show for you tonight. Tonight's guest is Dylan Volk. Dylan is a motivational speaker and author of Bad Choices, Make Good Stories, My Life with Autism. I'm sure it's on Amazon. And tonight's topic is autism, an introspective with Dylan Volk. Dylan Volk offers a new voice into his experience of living with autism, and we are certainly going to explore it as much as we can. Welcome to the show, Dylan Volk.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks, Dylan. You know, I've been thinking a lot about it, and sometimes certain words create a stigma or something like negativity, you know? But I want to explore the positive. If you could tell the listeners from your experience, what is, you know, a few of the positive aspects of autism?
Well, for the pros, in terms of the pros and cons, the pros I would say are you can be very passionate about a certain interest, a certain topic, and then you're all in on that topic. Everybody who's observed autism probably knows what I'm talking about. So they call them special interests. So you'll have, you know, people with autism will become an encyclopedia of facts about a certain interest, whether it's, you know, common ones are baseball for guys, what else, like trains I've seen a lot. It could be anything. For girls, I've seen horses. It seems to be a very common one. But the thing is, you'll learn absolutely everything there is to know about this topic and just be so passionate about it. And if you can make a living, if it's something you can turn into a living, that's great because you'll be better at it than anybody else.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I used to teach it at some time, and I could see the intensity of the mind of the autistic child. Why do you think that is? Dylan, do you have any idea?
I think that's just one of the hallmarks of autism. That's just like autism 101.
Mm-hmm. And I know you said, is that also because you was, I think when we spoke, a computer-like mind?
Yeah. People with autism, I would say, the way we think is tends to be purely logical. And the way I make decisions, I've figured out, it seems to be a combination of logic plus past experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I make calculations based on logic. So, like, well, this is supposed to be that, and this person told me that, and this is the way that is. And then I combine that with, well, in the past, I've done this, and that happened. And in the past, so I'll often make a decision based on, you know, something in the past having gone that way, and then I'll assume that, you know, I'll assume that it's going to be that way again because logically that makes sense. But most people go by intuition,
mm-hmm.
and so most people don't go by pure cold hard calculations. They kind of go by their gut, and
mm-hmm.
I think that's a big thing about autism. And I think, me anyway, I lack a quote-unquote gut. I don't have what most people refer to as, like, your gut instinct. I don't have that.
Well, that's interesting. So if a situation occurs, whether you should do something or not, you're saying your intuition or your heart is not playing a role in the decision-making?
No, because I'm not on the same wavelength as most people. So my intuition, frankly, comes from logic. Like, logic is my intuition.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Your logic, intuition.
I can give you an example if you want.
Yeah, sure.
this is in the book, but you'll read all about it. But here's a sneak preview. So I was getting arrested for meth, and it started out with me being pulled over because my car was broken on the side of the road, and the cops came and they thought that I was driving drunk when in actuality it was not alcohol, it was something much stronger. And so they were arresting me on suspicion of driving drunk. They asked me if there was anything in the car they would like to retrieve before they search my car. Mm-hmm. Now, I've had my car searched by police before, and they look in every nook and cranny, and, you know, they don't leave anything not found. And I had on my passenger seat a bag, a Beats headphone case with my drugs in there. Mm-hmm. And so I made the calculation, like, there might be some loophole, some nuance in the law, because the law is complex, and there might be some loophole that says the cops can't unzip this Beats headphones case. Mm-hmm. And if I'm asking for it to be in my possession, then technically it's like my possession and they can't open it. I don't know, but I thought there's a 100% chance that they're about to find this bag anyway. So why not take a 99% chance that there might be some gray area in the law and they won't unzip this bag if I ask for it to be in my possession. So I asked them to retrieve my bag with the drugs in it. Now, when most people heard about this, they thought it was ridiculous. They thought, well, how could you ask the cops to give you your drugs? Because most people's intuition, I guess, that would seem like a dumb move. Mm-hmm. But I made the calculation that in the past, I've had my car searched. This is what happened in the past. Also, the law is complicated and complex, so that's logic right there. So logic plus past experiences told me, take the chance that they might not unzip this bag. And so I asked the cops to go retrieve my drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But on the surface, that looked dumb to most people. But when you actually understand my logic and reasoning, I think I have a pretty good case.
Fascinating. So, that is a fascinating story. Okay. So,
it's a chapter
order
in my book. You got to get the book to read.
I have it, and it's right on my desk, and I'm certainly going to read it.
I mean, the audience.
Right. Oh, definitely. I highly recommend it. It's on Amazon. Is there any order with the logic?
Is there any order?
Right.
Well, yeah, logic is order.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, some people like to go in order, A, B, C, D, E, you know, F, G.
For me, no, but that might be the case for others.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As a result, what other positive? I would presume you bonded more. Did you bond more with your family?
Yeah, I have a pretty normal relationship with most of my family members. They're kind of my biggest fans. You know, they've always supported me.
Mm-hmm. And what do you feel as far as the understanding of somebody? I find this an interesting question. Do you feel people understand your way of thinking, or are they turned off from it?
No, I don't feel like most people understand it, because I don't feel like most people think as much as I do, frankly. I think most people just go on the surface. The thing is, most people don't have to think. They
mm-hmm.
they have a gut, they have an instinct, they have an intuition, and they go through life just kind of instinctively doing the right thing, never having to sit back and Monday morning quarterback situations like, oh, wait, why did I do this? Why did they react this way? Oh, it's because I said this, and that's how that made. So I have had to, you know, Monday morning quarterback my whole life in terms of social skills, and I'm often understanding why I did something to annoy people or piss people off or said something that was inappropriate. It's always after the fact I can understand
mm-hmm.
it. But see, that's insight, and I have a lot of insight,
mm-hmm.
but intuition, I don't have that. That would be knowing before you say something that's going to be inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. So insight to you is at that moment? Dylan?
Well, I have insight
intuition
in terms of analyzing.
Well, but what do you mean by insight, your version?
Analyzing things, breaking it down,
okay.
Especially after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Okay, after the fact. Okay, got it. And I'm just curious, before we go to the break, Dylan, when you feel or think, when you think somebody does not understand the depth of who you are, how do you navigate that? Does it affect you? Can you blow it off? You know.
You got to give me more specifics than that.
Well, if somebody is talking to you and you feel as if, let's continue with that, Dylan. Okay, after the break.
All right.
So you've been listening to Dylan Vogue, motivational speaker and author of Bad Choices Make Good Stories. This is A Matter of the Heart with me, your host, Carol Olivia, and we'll be back very shortly. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back. And we are talking about autism with Dylan Vogue. We're going to explore, I think, Dylan, some of the human qualities, you know? So I was curious, as far as compassion goes, Dylan, do you feel people are compassionate with an autistic child, person?
I think if it's visible, yes, meaning if you can tell the person has something wrong with them, then, yeah, I think it's socially it would be socially unacceptable to not at least give a little extra leeway and a little extra consideration. So, yes, but if it's invisible, in my case, no. The problem is with me is that it's kind of the biggest blessing and curse that I'm high-functioning enough so that people don't know I have a disability, but it's a curse because when I tell people that, they either don't believe it or forget often, or it just doesn't feel like I have a disability. So it's almost irrelevant, you know, telling people, because when I say something inappropriate or piss someone off, it doesn't look like someone with a disability making a mistake because of their disability. It looks like a neurotypical person who's just a douche. So they react that way. Even if I tell them that even if I told them, it doesn't matter. It matters what people feel, not what people know. So yes, if it's visible, no, if it's not visible.
And I'm sure you've, certainly from your past experiences, and I read a little, you know, what type of what wisdom have you learned through your trials and tribulations with autism? About life.
One thing I've learned, I kind of just learned this year. I was reflecting on 2018, and one thing I really learned is that the more you show people that you are open and receptive to feedback. See, for a long time, because I kind of tend to see neurotypical people as God, and I tend to kind of take whatever they say as word of the gospel. And for many years, I relied on feedback from neurotypical people to figure out what the hell was going on socially and why, you know, social cues and whatnot. So, but it turned into my relying on my accepting their constructive criticism, I think eventually turned into my depending on it too much and showing people that I am totally wanting their feedback, advice, suggestions. And when you do that, you attract people who don't want to help you for actually help you. They want the ego boost being the person.
It comes from the ego.
Being the person that gives advice to people. And the more you show people that you are seeking advice, the more they will think you need advice, and then the more they will start to nitpick and see, like if you tell someone, you know, I need help, give me suggestions, all of a sudden, all these people are going to start rushing up with clipboards, like, oh, okay, see, here's what you're doing wrong, and I realize that you can tell the difference between, because sometimes people are trying to be helpful, you can tell the difference if someone gives you very specific advice, Like, don't say those words again. Don't put your left foot here and your right foot there, and here's why. Do this instead. That's when they're trying to actually help you. But when someone comes at you with a bunch of grandiose, abstract, like, you just got to think about yourself in the world and imagine, like, how you react and just kind of think about this and big picture advice like that, that is when it's just for an ego boost. That is when they're full of BS.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that experience recently with this friend. He started giving me all of this grandiose, big-picture advice, would not give me any specifics. And then this guy's a comedian. And then I went to his comedy show, and I saw his act, expecting him to be really funny because I thought he was a very smart guy. And his act was so bad. It was terrible. It was not funny. It was the worst comedian out of the whole show. And I was like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And so it got me thinking.
Mm. So from what I'm listening to you about is it touches much more into your own self-empowerment.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, if we always listen to other people giving us advice, we're losing our own decision-making. Maybe we're not even thinking enough about who we are.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, it's kind of a double-edged sword because if I needed advice for a long time. I absolutely needed it. But you have to learn to spot who is giving genuine advice and who
mm-hmm.
is just trying to be the person that gives mm-hmm. advice. And I think you do it by seeing how specific their advice is.
Mm. Maybe also studying who they are. You know, who they've
yeah.
become in life, you know?
Yeah. Do they have their stuff going on? You know, I
right,
saw this
exactly.
guy, and I saw his act, and I was like, if he thinks that is good enough to get up in front of a club full of people. This was at the Laugh Factory in Los Angeles. It was like an open mic night. Then he doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, who is he to give me advice?
Right, exactly. That's a very big lesson. Right?
But it's not to say that you don't take advice from people, because it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't, because
mm-hmm.
for a long time, I absolutely needed advice, and I
mm-hmm.
relied on feedback because I couldn't figure it out for myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe then if we're going to take advice from people, it's maybe be prior to that is to study or to reflect on who that person is, who they become. Do they have wisdom?
Right.
You know, if
and
they
I,
don't have wisdom... then maybe question it, you know?
Right, and I think I made the mistake of just being like, okay, are they neurotypical? Check, and take
mm-hmm.
advice from them.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
I
know,
realize not all neurotypical people are God.
Nobody is. You know?
Yeah.
We have God-like qualities within ourselves, you know?
Yeah,
and I think any time we put somebody on a pedestal, we lose ourselves.
Right. But there are neurotypical people who, you know, most of you guys amaze me because you can do things I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just go through life, the way you just go through life making little to no social errors, and then
mm-hmm.
the way you can, like, do things like take notes in class. Like,
mm-hmm.
you can write down, you can listen to the teacher as they're talking, and also...
Mm-hmm.
compartmentalize what is important enough to write down, what's not, and write it down. Doing all that multitasking at once in high school just blew my mind. I was like, I don't know how you neurotypical people do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good... So how would you do it in a classroom in high school?
I could never figure out what I was supposed to write down and what was just superfluous information. It all seemed equally important to me because...
Mm-hmm.
And so I was supposed to apparently just like on the spot, I guess you guys just like on the fly,
mm-hmm.
like judge in your mind, okay, that needs to get written down, that doesn't need to get written down. It's like, oh, wow, I don't know how you do that. And then the other thing is I was focused on writing. I can only generally focus on doing one thing well at a time. So I was focusing on the writing,
mm-hmm.
and then I can't listen at the same time as I'm trying to, because I'm trying to write, you know?
Mhm. What about music, Dylan? As far as the listening aspect.
Well, music has always been my kind of special interest. It's kind of been the one that has always been under. It's been the most what is the word I'm looking for? Sentient? Is that the word?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm big into pop music. That's my thing. And I liked it ever since I was 5 or 6 years old. And so that's pretty unusual. I always say I have the taste in music of a gay black guy.
Mm-hmm. So your means of listening, is that the same as somebody who is not, you know, autistic? Is there any difference?
I think me in particular, I pay attention a lot more because it's just my special interest.
Right.
And some autistic people have sensory issues where, you know, they're very sensitive to certain noises or whatnot. I don't really have that so much.
Mm-hmm.
So it really varies.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And painting, are you an artist at all?
Not really. Not my thing.
Okay. But if you saw a painting like a Van Gogh, Modigliani, you know, can you reflect on the color? You know, is anything different with that?
Well, we not in my
case.
No.
No? Okay. Well, we just got the signal. We're going to be right back, everyone, with Dylan Volk. And you've been listening to him on The Matter of the Heart, 1100 AM, KFNX. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to The Matter of the Heart, Independent Talk Radio, 1100 AM KFNX. And we have been listening, and we will keep on listening, to Dylan Volk. Dylan, would you like to give out some of your contact information now and at the end, and as well as in the fourth segment?
Yes, so I've made it real easy for everybody. I'm the same name on every social media network, and that's going to be Real Dylon, which is my stage name. So it's RealDielawn, and that's on Facebook, YouTube, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, uniform. Real Dylon.
Thank you.
Take
how about an interesting story, Dylan?
Okay, so I've got one particularly spicy story that is from the book I'm going to share with your audience as another kind of trailer, if you will. So I went through a period where I was trying to fit in with gay guys just as friends, though. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not gay myself. I've never been gay. However, I noticed that I had a lot in common with them after I had a gay roommate, and I noticed we had the same taste in music. He liked things very clean. I noticed we had the same taste in food, and so I thought maybe I could identify a new group that I could kind of try to fit into and be friends with and have things in common. So, but it can be very tricky trying to be friends with gay guys, but just as friends,
mm-hmm.
as a straight guy. So I found this group of gay guys. This was when I was living in southern Utah, and it's a very conservative area, so the gay guys, you know, they all kind of hung together, and I was living on a college campus too, so I had this group of gay guys that I was semi-friends with. You know, they would hang out with me and whatnot, but we weren't really all the way friends. Like, I didn't feel like I was really being plugged into their social circle.
Right.
So
no,
like they
yeah.
were just kind of half friends, being polite. And so I noticed that they stopped hitting me up. They stopped inviting me to do stuff. And my birthday was coming up, so I threw a Hail Mary pass, and I used my birthday as a way to, like, guilt trip them into giving me one more chance to try and fit in with them. And I, like, this was my last shot. It's my birthday. I might as well use it. And so they said, yeah, come over on your birthday, and we can party. So I went over there, and there was this one gay guy who had been kind of the nicest to me. I thought he might actually want to be friends. I didn't know if maybe he was just thought I might be gay too, but he was acting the most like a friend out of all the group. And so he bought me a bottle of vodka for a present. And so I was like, all right, maybe I can make friends with this guy. So what happened is the night was pretty uneventful. I fell asleep, we were sitting on, the night ended with, at like 4 a.m., I'm sitting on his couch, I'm on one side, he's on the other, and I started talking, I was drunk, and so I started drunkenly ranting about some of my innermost thoughts to try and, you know, see if I could bond with him, and I started talking about how I don't, my identity issues, and I didn't feel like I could fit in with other straight white guys because I felt like they didn't have a certain style that I liked, blah, blah, blah. So I look over after about 20 minutes of, well, what felt like 20 minutes of me drunken rambling, I look over and he's fallen asleep. Like, he was sleeping most of the time I was talking. So I am embarrassed, and I get up and I walk home. And so that's what really happened. But the next day, I woke up, and so I should say there were some rumors that I might be gay myself, obviously, because I was trying to
create
this crowd, and the music I was, you know, I used to drive around and I would play Britney Spears and Lady Gaga all the way up with all my windows down, and so there were some rumors already. So what I found out the next day that he had decided to go around telling everyone that I let him perform an oral sex act on me. And so I realized what he did was he took advantage of the fact that there were already rumors, and he knew if he went around and said that this happened, that that would be enough to, like, push it over the edge so no one would ever believe my word over his, because, you know, it's the classic trick people play, like, at work, where the person who's been there the longest gets believed over the new guy. And so I saw what he was doing here, and I didn't understand why he wanted to do this to me, but he went around telling everyone that this sexual act happened. Mm-hmm. Which did not. What happened was I just was embarrassed and walked home. So I go over to their apartments, and I start demanding in front of everybody. Everybody's, like, there hanging out, and I start making a scene and demanding that he tell everyone the truth. I start kind of spurging out a little, throwing kind of a fit, because I was very upset. And his female roommate comes out, and she, and you can imagine whose side she was on. And so she goes out onto the porch, and then I see her wag her finger at me, like, a little bit behind the door, out of everybody else's eyesight. I see her wag her finger at me, and she goes, "Dylan, come here. I want to show you something." And if I had gone out there, she probably would have either physically assaulted me, and if I had defended myself, she would have called the police and said I hit her, or she might have hit herself and then claimed that I hit her. She was about to do something very nefarious. And thank God I had just enough social savvy. This was in 2014. I had just enough social savvy of, based on, you know, wisdom, as you say, to realize what she was doing, and I just squint my eyes at her, and I'm like, "No, I don't think so." And then she got really mad because I had outsmarted her now, and I was also, like, kind of rejecting her. She was pretending to seduce me, and I was like, "No, I don't think so." And so she gets so mad, and she storms back in because she thought she had me. You know, she thought I was dumb enough to fall for this dirty trick. And frankly, two years earlier, I would have been. I would have gone right out there and fallen right into her trap. And so I never ended up getting accepted into this group of gay guys, and that was that. And eventually, I got to know some other people around town, and eventually the rumor kind of partially died. But yeah, so that was a crashing and burning of me trying to make friends.
So what did you learn the wisdom from that, Dylan?
Well, I figured out why this guy did that to me. So in his mind, he thought that I must be gay, or at least bi curious or something. And he took my insisting that I was straight as a rejection of him personally.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it only hit me years later as I was writing the book, actually. I realized, because it was baffling to me as why he wanted to do this to me. And then I realized, he thought I was rejecting him, and he was trying to hurt me back.
Revenge.
Yeah. Like, you're rejecting me, so I'm going to make you feel it.
Right. Deep-rooted insecurity with him. Very deep.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a good, interesting story. Wow. Well, you learned, obviously. So kind of relating to that as far as bonding with people, do you find it, is there any difficulty because you have a, and again, I'm looking at autism listeners in a very positive way. Do you find it any difficulty with bonding with people?
The difficulty comes from not being able to sometimes properly read people's emotions and whatnot. So sometimes I will come on too strong to people, sometimes not enough. You know, it's the difficulty is navigating. But if someone actually gives me a chance, no, I don't have a difficult time bonding with them.
Mm-hmm. And is that true of most autistic people?
No, I think most autistic people don't even, many of them don't desire bonding with people. Many of them are just kind of, it's unusual for me that I have such a desire to be social and connect with people. Most autistic people are like, nah, I'm good.
Hmm. Do you think it's because they're so much into the computer-like mind?
Yeah.
Do you think that's one of the reasons, Dylan?
That is the reason.
That is the reason. Okay. Wow. That must be some interesting mind as far as I'm concerned, you know? Wow, fascinating mind. Well, we just got the cue. We're going to be back with you, of course. We'll get your contact information again. And how about going to, I know you, well, two things I find interesting. You have a stage name?
Yes. I go by Dylon, which is just my name, Dylan, and then you just say it a little bit differently. People sometimes overthink it. They're like,
right,
what does that mean? It's just an alteration of my name. It's whichever you prefer.
Right. But when you say dialogue, stage, does that mean your speaking engagements? What do you mean by?
Well, social media and
okay,
it's just kind of my persona.
Okay, got it. Okay. Well, we will return with Dylan Volk in a few. And I'm sure he's going to have some more interesting information. It's more like an education. He's educating you on the many aspects of autism and certainly the positive aspects as well. We'll be right back, everyone. We are back with Dylan Volk, motivational speaker and author of Bad Choices, Make Good Stories, My Life with Autism. Dylan, would you like to give out your contact information again?
Yeah, so to buy my book, it's badchoicesmakegoodstories.com or on Amazon, Bad Choices Make Good Stories, My Life with Autism. My social media is Real Dylon on every platform, so R-E-A-L D-I-E-L-A-W-N. So that's take your pick. Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Real Dylon.
And are you on LinkedIn?
Yes. LinkedIn, I believe, is my government name you want to use on there. So it's going to be Dylan. But let's just keep it simple for the audience because I don't think they're going to be looking for me on there. We're just Real Dylon everywhere.
Okay. And also, listeners, I know Dylan has been doing more of an educational show, which is so inspiring. But if anybody has a question with this last segment, the phone number to call Dylan directly is 602-277-5369 or 866-536-1100. Norm is in the production room, and he will take your call. Dylan, I know you speak at different events. What are some of the topics?
So the topics that I often talk about are the myth that there is no such thing as normal. A lot of people say they like to repeat this mantra of, like, there's no such thing as normal and we're all different. And I say that that actually is kind of it's kind of devaluing to the struggle I go through every day, because there absolutely is a such thing as normal. Growing up not normal for 27 years now, I can tell you there, normal absolutely exists, and it's also okay to want to be normal Mm-hmm. And I tell all the normies in the audience, if you're normal, you're okay just the way you are. So,
mm-hmm.
And then another topic is I talk about jobs. I'm very good at getting jobs and not very good at keeping jobs. I talk about how it's a different skill set to get a job versus keeping a job. It's all about presentation skills to get the job. And then to keep the job, it's a whole other story. It's all about the many complex misunderstandings and miscommunications that can go on in the workplace. And so I talk about, and I've been fired from, I put up a whole list in my talks, an Excel spreadsheet of all the jobs I've been fired from. And it's pretty astounding when you look at it. I've been fired from probably about 40 jobs, I would say, and I'm only 27.
Wow. Now, is that because they don't understand you, or what is, you know, because you're highly intelligent?
Really has, it's ranged from totally my fault to completely their fault and everywhere in between. So I'm just very prone to making mistakes, and I also seem to have bad luck too. So the thing is with most neurotypical people, like, they might experience like half the misfortune I do because they make mistakes that most people make, like oversleeping and missing a shift, you know, or like stuff like that. Or like, so once in a while they'll make a mistake like that, and sometimes they'll have bad luck. The thing is with me, I also have that bad luck and regular kind of mistake making. And then I also, on top of that, I make all these mistakes because of my autism. So oftentimes with like three strike,
mm-hmm.
policies in corporate, and they'll have a three strikes and you're out policy. And so with neurotypical people, I realize that's a very easy number to avoid. Like, that's reasonable. Like, neurotypical people might get one write-up, maybe two write-ups, and it's like reasonable to ask a neurotypical person, don't get three write-ups, otherwise you're done. But
mm-hmm.
for me, like, no, it's a totally different story. Like, three write-ups for me comes super fast because I might get one write-up that neurotypical people would get, and then I also, on top of that, make all these other mistakes that neurotypical people don't make.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, maybe, you know, this is a thought, and I know what you're saying, you know, but at the same time, as a result of your autism, you speak about it, and that's a very big mission. It's a larger
yeah.
mission than working at a desk, you know. Because you're educating people, you're giving them inspiration, their knowledge about what it's like. So maybe as a result of that, you wouldn't be speaking about it as much.
Yeah. Well, I have yet to make much money off of it. So if anybody is listening who books speaking engagements,
mm-hmm.
and you want to turn my luck around, and you know where to find me. But, yeah, what you're saying I would absolutely agree with if I was making, like, a living off of it. But as of yet, I cannot say that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because you're not being rewarded financially.
No.
Okay, but are you being rewarded internally?
Well, at a certain point, it comes, you know, we live in a world where you have to have money. You have to make money.
Right.
So
I know.
At a certain point, the internal becomes irrelevant and overrided by the fact that I'm still not. I see other people that are successful, more successful than I am, and you know, I hate to brag or sound conceited, but I don't think they're nearly as interesting as me. And I'm just like, wow, how is that person all the way here and I'm still all the way down here?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. I just seem to have very bad luck. But hey, if you
mm-hmm.
book speaking engagements and you're listening to the sound of my voice,
mm-hmm.
Real Dylan on social media, hit
mm-hmm.
me up.
Mm-hmm. Maybe let's change the word bad luck to, divine opportunities. You know, we all have different paths of life, and I don't think we're in charge of, you know, when certain events will happen to us. So I'm sure there'll be a wonderful opportunity for you, Dylan, you know?
Yeah, I just hope it's not before I'm old. You know, I would like it while I'm still, like,
right.
you know.
But you're young now, right? You're what? In your
20s? I'm 27, which is
okay.
Young, but it's also not.
Okay. Well, don't tell that to too many people in their 50s now listening to the show.
Yeah, I know. I probably sound ridiculous.
We want them to still keep listening to the show, Dylan. What other inspiration would you like to tell the audience before we end the show, Dylan?
Did we have any calls? Or?
Well, let me do it. 602-277-5369 or 866-536-1100. If you have a question, any question at all, Dylan is there for you.
I think the overall biggest message I want people to get from my book is don't ever hear cliches the same way again. So if you hear something that is a often repeated phrase, whether it's there's no such thing as normal, or whether it's guys just want sex, or whether it's what's another one? Another one people say is swag doesn't pay the bills, which I talk about in the book, and I say, well, swag is people skills when it comes down to it, and people skills absolutely pays the bills. But my point is, don't ever hear cliches the same way again. If you hear somebody saying something that has often been repeated by other people, question them about it politely. Just be kind of question it. See if they've actually ever thought about what they're saying, or if they're just repeating what they've heard. And if you hear something that, you know, is an often repeated, you know, trite cliche, think about it and say, is this really true? Is this actually the case? Because many things that people say are just not true, and they're cheap, so they just repeat it.
Thank you so much, Dylan. You've been so interesting. You've been listening to Dylan Vogue, motivational speaker on autism and author of Bad Choices, Make Good Stories, My Life with Autism. A podcast of the show will be on the 1100 AM KFNX website in a couple of days, and all shows of The Matter of the Heart on SoundCloud. My email is intuitivecarol@gmail.com. If you have any comments, I'd love to hear from you. Joy, peace, and success, everyone. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to The Matter of the Heart with Carol Olivia and friends on Independent Talk 1100 KFNX.